Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavaz. Thanks for joining us for episode 74. And a bit of a first for us, mate, we've been talking about it for a while, is that we're going to have our episodes now on a Wednesday night due to, I guess, a range of things, I suppose, isn't it?
Well, we're both busy. We are busy both professionally and personally, Adam. So, I mean, people used to ask us, how do you manage a weekly episode with everything that's going on? And one of the reasons is things just get busier in both our lives, don't they? So this is one of them. We had to change nights.
We had to make that change. And we want to get straight into it tonight because we've got a range of topics we want to talk about, and we actually got one that we had a lot of hits on the Facebook page last week as well. But I've got a question for you, Rick, that I just want to kick off, and I've been enjoying sort of throwing different sort of questions at you as we've started each episode. This one, I'm going to come back to staff love the morning teas. Now we have those special morning teas and people bring in all sorts of stuff. When you come in for a morning tea, what's the one thing that gets you excited? Like, what's the one thing that you actually see out there that someone's brought in that you see that and go, oh, I tell you what, I'm going to absolutely smash three or four of that or something like that? What's something that you actually come in and go, I'm so glad that's there on the table?
Yeah, well, sometimes it's the things that maybe you don't. I don't eat so much at home. So I know for me, it can be antipasto stuff will
really
get me going. But
okay.
Adam, I have, and I'm embarrassed to say this really, I've absolutely annihilated at about 11 o'clock hot sausage rolls and little party pies.
Yep.
It's so wrong. I've had like 6 months and then gone back to class.
That's unreal, because the sausage rolls and the party pies are such an Australian food, and you've grown up on it, haven't you? You go places and you go to things and you eat it. And I know my principal makes probably, I look forward to it. She actually calls me out when I come into the staff room and goes, made the sausage rolls again, like actually pings me for it. I go, you little beauty, and I sit down with a plate and I get going, and it's great. It really gives you a lift.
The teachers love morning tea that's put on for them, and we get one every week. We're very lucky, and a different team puts it on every week, and there are some favourites, but you do see a lot of, particularly, and I'm not sexist here, but you do see a lot of the men on staff flock to the hot pastries. And I think maybe it is a hark back, like you said, to eating them when we were kids, because I certainly don't eat them much outside of the morning tea.
No, me either. The other one I always look for are the rum balls. You know, the rum balls are there. They obviously don't have any rum in them and stuff, but I see those, and I reckon I would just eat that. I reckon I have four or five of those, and you kind of wait. You have one, do a bit of chatting, and you kind of keep an eye on them. No one else has eaten them. Oh, I feel well enough to have another one then. Like, you don't want to eat them all on people. People come, but if no one's touching them, I'm going to finish them off.
Yeah, you see some people put away their yogurts and their healthy bits for those moments.
And so they should. I'll tell you what, there's too much of that stuff going around staff food tables at the moment. Enough flinking grass. You know that old 4 and 20 pie where you say, what do you got for a rabbit food? Again. You know, that sort of stuff. Right. I feel like that's around the table all at the moment. There's all that stuff. So it's nice to sort of eat the sweet tooth from time to time.
Treats in moderation, Adam.
Treats in moderation. So with tweets in moderation in mind, we've got some wonderful topics tonight again that we've had on the Facebook page as well, and other things we want to talk about. So let's get into it. Well, Rick, our first topic tonight is one that we were kind of stoked about. We kind of threw out a question on Friday about homework, and it was an article, it was in the Herald Sun. I didn't actually post it because, as you know, the Herald Sun has a paywall, and it would have been kind of pointless putting an article out there that no one could read unless you were paying for it. And
I don't think it matters anymore, Adam. I think with this topic, it's such a polarising topic that I think just the question you put on our page about what are people's thoughts on homework just gets the discussion going.
Exactly right, and enough's been said about it, but we kind of put it out there, and we want to thank, we had sort of six responses. So we had Melissa, Michael, Jin, Sarah, Michelle and Kate. We can't thank you guys enough. I think when we started the podcast, we bring it up quite regularly. We always wanted to connect with our listeners. We always wanted that input from our listeners to get some of that discussion going. And we were actually kind of blown away by the responses from people. And okay, homework is that sort of topic, as you said, that has differing opinions and differing views. But we first off want to say thank you to all of you for your contributions towards that. It's just absolutely fantastic. We love reading it. And we're kind of going to try and link back a few of the main points to some of the things that were posted. And I think the first one that came up was we wanted to talk about what Jin said, and because we want to have a look at the relevance of homework today, don't we, Rick? And she brought up a point from John Hattie, Rick, and it was pretty relevant to what we were talking about.
It's really relevant too for me personally, Adam, because our school is has headed down this road this year. Only last week did notes go out to parents about our new homework policy, which is based on Hattie's research and some of the other research. Our leadership are voracious readers, and Jin mentioned that Hattie's evidence and lots of research into homework has shown that homework does not improve student outcomes. There is no data to suggest that it greatly improves student outcomes, and there is research to suggest that it only may assist in organisational habits and those work habits when going to high school.
Could I ask you about that as well? A quote like that from Hattie, who's highly respected. Why isn't that out in the mainstream more? Like, why are we still seeing, okay, it's a loaded question.
Great question.
Isn't that out there more? Hattie going, listen, parents, there's no research. There's nothing to suggest that homework improves anything. Why isn't that out there?
So is it something to do then with maybe that schools have just always done it? Maybe it could be that.
Yep.
It could be also that, because that's going back years and years and years, isn't
yep.
it?
Like, yeah, it is. Before it you is. And I yeah, were born. Yeah. Yep.
Is it also that some schools just have their own learning policy?
Mm.
Whether the research says it or not, some schools might say, we believe at our school that this should happen.
And is it a quote from someone that you think parents almost don't understand? They kind of would think, we'd blow it off. If you said, you had a school council meeting, said, look, we want to get rid of homework, for example, and you had a lot of parents who were going, no, homework's important. And you said, well, actually, the quotes from the research here suggest that it makes no difference. Mm. You can kind of see parents going, no, I think it does. My kids love doing it. It's a culture thing too, isn't it?
Well, that's happened at our school, and school council have approved it. I want to follow on with what Sarah said underneath in reply to Jin's comment about homework being short, sharp, engaging, and reinforcing concepts learned. Mm. I think that goes for primary and secondary. But I also think that probably applies more to the foundation level, so prep. Mm. I think there has to be some reading going on at home.
Yeah.
Definitely. But I reckon from about year three onwards, Adam, unless the kids are engaged in the task and want to do it, and this is where my personal experience is coming from, we haven't banned homework, but teachers are not prescribing it at the moment.
Mm.
Students can do whatever they want to work on based on their passions, based on what they feel like they need to. If they read every night already, keep reading every night.
Yeah. And that's the way schools are going a little bit, isn't it? They kind of, we want them to be doing things in their passion and things like that, which is really important. Just going on a little bit further than that as well, I wanted to talk about the idea, going and sticking with the idea that there's no relevance, there's sort of no research to back up the, that homework's important, is the idea of being overworked. Now, in terms of overworking, which is something that Michael mentioned, we want kids to go home and be kids. And if we give them too much homework, there is that risk of them being overworked, that they're going to come home. Because, as you know, kids expend so much energy at school and they work so hard. They are busy. And I find a lot of parents constantly, particularly in the 1-2 area, go, hey, they're going, they're so tired when they're coming home. And I actually say, well, it's because here they're concentrating so hard and they're putting in all that sort of stuff that by the time they get home, they just don't have the energy to really probably do some of those things like homework tasks to the ability that you probably want them to do.
Yeah, I think Michael mentions burnout, and I think that applies for students from 6-year-old right up to 18. I think you're absolutely right. And don't students have a lot of extracurricular activities or personal activities they do outside school, such as sport, music, all sorts of things?
And that's the thing, they've got so much. So I would rather the kids going home and, okay, reading's important things, but if they've got, I hate those kids who come into me the next day and actually come to me, and they're a kid who's probably done their reader for every day for 4 weeks, and they come in and go, Mr. Lars, I'm really sorry I didn't get to do it because we had a birthday dinner. It's almost like they feel guilty for just for one night they didn't read a book. And I always say to them, it's okay. It's important that you still go and do these things. And I think for the students to get into that sort of mindset is a terrible sort of thing.
Look, there was a lot of time management discussion, but I want to touch on what Kate said about how maybe some of the discussions on the page were missing the point that it's not just homework that's pointless. Some schoolwork we do is pointless.
Mm.
It's actually about the task itself and whether it's engaging and whether it's giving students a way in to have some say over the task.
Because I know that over the years you've spoken about, and we want to touch on it here as well, that the homework that resonates with the students. And I know that back in your earlier teaching days that you actually had some activities. I know that we even almost closely mentioned on the Facebook page of an activity that you're able to do as homework.
Well, before I go into that, I mean, the bulk of the homework that I've received from students over the years has been crap. Yeah. And I've said this to students once, that I didn't go to university to become a teacher to check on Friday if homework's been marked in and dish out notes for the kids that didn't return it. And you knew that some kids had done it that morning, and like whether it was spelling words or any form of writing, the passion wasn't there. They didn't care.
No, of course not.
To me, I always felt funny about that. What's the point? The only task that I can remember resonating was with year 3-4s at my previous school. And I'm not sure whether our homework program was a bit lax that year. I don't think it was. I think we may have just had a bit more freedom or I was being a bit cheeky. But I would just send home, and this is similar to the VCOP program that was mentioned by Michelle and by Melissa, who mentioned the Big Write VCOP writing program. Now, I'm not that familiar with that, but with what I used to do, and this was purely, Adam, because I felt like I had a bit more freedom, I would just send home a prompt at the start of the week. I remember one of them was, what if we all lived on water? And I remember I had a lot of parents after a few weeks saying, we love these questions. We love, we're having great discussions. And I didn't say to the kids, you have to discuss, you have to write. I just said, I'd like to see some sort of response.
Mm.
And some would come doing something digital. Some would come with just a few questions answered that they'd done with mum and dad. But a lot of the parents were saying, we're having fantastic discussions. And that's the only time for me in my career that homework has resonated.
Yeah, and that's fantastic, isn't it? Because they're not just doing writing. They're learning vocab and they're discussing and they're opening up and they're, you know, being creative and imaginative. It's just wonderful. So I think we want to leave it there, a big discussion, mate. But again, we want to thank Melissa, Michael, Jin, Sarah, Michelle and Kate for their wonderful contributions. And I think what you and I got out of that when we posed the question is that there's not a lot of research to suggest that homework is relevant in the modern classroom. Having said that, there is a little place, obviously, for setting up good work habits, you know, things like time management skills and allowing the students to pursue some passions, I guess, would be really, really good. So there is, I suppose, a little spot for it, but I think the old days of sending home sheets after sheets and giving them that sort of stuff, those days are done because kids just don't respond to it.
I just think full teacher prescribed days, particularly at the primary level, are done. Now, we are going to mention high school a little bit later on in the podcast, and Adam, I just want to finish off with something that I heard a high school teacher say recently to a friend of mine who passed it on, was primary school doesn't prepare kids for high school. High school prepares kids for high school. In terms of the homework argument. So I thought that might be just an interesting one to put out there for people to think about. So Adam, for topic two tonight, I wanted to go down a slightly different path. I've been musing recently over our many episodes that we've recorded and a lot of the topics that we've discussed, the articles that we see constantly in the paper. And I feel that we often, I wouldn't say we're negative, in fact I'd say far from it, but we do discuss a lot of things that could be better in education. We talk about how can we make student outcomes be better? How can we make kids happier in the classroom? How can we improve staff morale? How can we improve our skills? All those sorts of things. And I thought for a topic tonight, though, it may be just nice for you and I to stop and take stock, and maybe people who are listening, wherever you're listening to us right now, and think about perhaps some of those moments that don't get mentioned all that much. Perhaps some of those things that made us enter the teaching profession in the first place, Adam. And I'm talking about tiny things. I'm talking about the tiniest interaction that you might have with a student that ends in a smile. Or that ends in a, thanks, Mr. KT. Or they might not smile at you, but you see some sort of reaction on their faces. You know, and I think, Adam, when you and I started, I can still remember kind of that excited feeling of being in first year uni and thinking about what was to come. And a lot of it was being given that privilege of being part of a young person's life.
And there's nothing like interacting with the students. There's nothing, you never go into school and it's never the same day twice. There's always something that comes up. And I think they're not only just the, I think you used the word maybe before, they're not just the unmentioned moments, but they're definitely those unexpected moments as well, where somebody just crops up and makes you smile. And I mean, one that comes to mind straight away for me was even, I think sometimes you can get yourself down, you work so hard and you get yourself down and, you know, things like that. And I had a day off on Monday. I wasn't well and things. And then Tuesday, I was in the classroom just doing some things. There were some kids outside my window. And one of my students, I actually overheard them say, oh, geez, I hope Mr. Lavaz is back today. Oh, I missed him yesterday. And it was just one of my little grade twos. And I was kind of listening. I went, how good is that?
Just gave you a little kick.
It gave you a little kick, but I think what it also gave is, I'm not certainly trying to toot my own horn here or anything like that. It was more that I've clearly made a connection with this student. I've been able to teach them and to listen to them and mould them and do all those sort of things, even in this short amount of time that they want me in that classroom. They want to be in my classroom and they want to learn and stuff. And it's those little things that on a, you know, in a week where you've had a shocking week, you've had three meetings, you've been under the pump, a little comment like that can make that whole week better.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The things that spring to mind are those small things that are actually the big things for me. Is you might be, over the years, if I've been reading a class novel, one morning one of the students, or in fact sometimes it's more than one, will appear next morning with a copy, their own copy of that book under their arm. And they just come over and say, can I follow along while you're reading? And I just think, bang, that's massive for me. After the first week this year, first week, we'd only done three days with the kids. Year six girl came up and just said, thanks for teaching us this week, Mr. KT. And I felt like I hadn't done much teaching, but it was kind of like just that little acknowledgement together. It's nice to be in your class.
Yeah. There's so many of those great moments. And I think you're right. In amongst everything else that goes on, it's easy to lose sight of that impact that you can make. And it's particularly, I really like the book one. Another one, like I like reading the short stories, and I read Paul Jennings' short stories too, then when I get the chance. And the amount of kids who end up wanting to go up to the library to get Paul Jennings' books and read them as part of their conferencing, which you can't let them really do because it's not really at the level, but you can let them read them as a choice book, that connection and stuff. They want to read about it, and the parents start coming in. Who's this Paul Jennings? They want me to buy the books and, you know, things like that. That's great. I
can't believe they've never heard of Paul Jennings. But that's another story.
It's so ridiculous, isn't it?
And finally, Adam, this is an interesting one. When some of us get to the point where we maybe have some stressful moments in the job, or whether we're a little bit burnt out, I find that maybe this is where teachers are unique individuals, because I find that you can have times where you feel like, you know, you've had it up to here with the job, like you're barely treading water, you're sinking, and you can have those little moments still in the classroom, even maybe on a day when you feel like you should be at home, whether it's, you know, mentally challenging, or whether you're exhausted or feeling a bit sick. And sometimes it can be just one of those interactions that we've mentioned that kind of makes you think, God, I'm glad I'm here.
Yeah.
And I think I see that as almost an obsession from teachers, and hence why I reckon a lot of people who go into leadership really miss that interaction with kids.
Yeah.
It's almost a sick thing, isn't it? That we can be so stressed maybe, or so full on with work, that you still you cry out for that interaction with the kids.
You really do. And I'm probably wrong too, but you mentioned the leadership one too. It's kind of, you know, how often would say a kid come up and go, oh, thanks for being an AP. Like things like that. It wouldn't happen. I don't say that as a joke. I say that as it wouldn't happen as much as the kids are constantly in your classroom and giving you, you know, as long as you're doing a good job, obviously, but giving that positive feedback. It's just, you know, it's great.
I think leaders in schools, the principal class, and even leading teachers, but principal class, the ones that can go around to many kids over across many year levels and know their kids by names and have conversations with them, to me, are some of the great teacher leaders, I think.
Yeah, so I want to throw out there, as Rick said at the start, have a bit of a think to yourself about some of those moments, particularly maybe this year, they've really given you a lift. And we might actually put something out early next week on the blog. Just a short question. We'd actually love to hear about what your unmentioned moments are that gave you a smile or brought a tear to the eye. And we might actually follow it up on a further podcast just for 3 or 4 minutes and bring up some of those really great moments that brought a smile to your face or that tear to the eye.
Yeah, I like that. I like that heading, the unmentioned moments. Adam, for our third topic tonight, we're going to go back to writing and the skills involved in writing. We've talked about it many times. I know that you wanted to touch on a little bit about your personal experience with your current crop of writers this year, but also about the mechanics. How much time should we focus on texts and genres as opposed to the secretarial stuff, the punctuation, the craft of writing, I guess, for want of a better term? Where would you like to start?
Well, I guess it's a topic that's come up this year, obviously. It's part of our PLC team in our group. It's something that we've identified that needed a lot of work, to the point where we have students finding it very, very, very difficult, even in grade one now, forming letters, not understanding what a sentence is, you know, spelling, being able to simply write on the lines and do that properly, pencil grips, all these sorts of things that are such, as you said, it's the craft, it's the basics of writing that they simply don't have. And what I'm finding is really challenging is that I find we don't get the opportunity to spend enough time teaching that. Because I think of things like NatPlan, and we want to, you know, cover a lot of things, we end up having sort of almost a writing schedule, don't we? We have a schedule where we've got narrative, then we've got persuasive, we've got procedural, and we've got information text, and we've got poetry, and we've got all these things. And we really focus a lot of our time on learning how to write those genres. It's really genre based. It's learning how to plan and write a narrative, and, you know, plan and set the arguments out, persuasive. We do all those things, which, don't get me wrong, is brilliant. But lost in all of that, I think, is that we don't spend enough time on going, so what is a sentence? What is a sentence? Like, I think back to my days in 5-6, and you would probably say the same thing. I was still getting kids coming to me in 5-6 who would regularly leave capital letters off the start of a sentence. Yeah, and it would be frustrating. I could pull what's left of my hair out and go, these are things by 5-6 they should know. I kind of feel like there's a part of me that goes, Peter, too, you know, we should be focusing on maybe a couple of genres and focusing a lot on the mechanics and a lot of the basics. And then so by the time they get to grade 3-4, you can go, right, now we can go to procedure, we can go to poetry, we can go to these things, comfortable in the knowledge that most kids know what a sentence is and know how to use their capital letters and full stops and do those things, so they can focus on really digging deeper into some of those genres.
Yeah, there's always, it does worry me at the primary level. And I'm really interested in, with high school, how writing works in the English classes. And if some of our secondary teachers, if you could share with us, if you're aware, Is it based on text type, or are they work? Because I know obviously years 7 and year 9 still have to complete the national testing. It does concern me that we have this deadline of the national testing in NAPLAN in May to cover at this stage narrative writing and persuasive writing. Really important to be able to learn how to entertain and to persuade with your writing. But
yes,
that deadline has always concerned me, because I think, Adam, that one of the perfect, or not perfect, but one of the great ways to teach writing, which I feel gets lost in terms of my experiences, is teaching the craft, teaching how to incorporate that craft into the different genres. If you're writing a narrative, you might try this. If you're writing a procedural text, you might try this. Instead of doing, right, we're all doing information reports now. Yep. I don't know.
It's even giving opportunity to look at things like sizzling beginnings, you know, descriptive language, all these sorts of things, you know, worn out words and things like today with my kids, I love the opportunity to go, right, a lot of you, you know, with your fairy tales at the moment have used the word said, you know, it's that dialogue, said. What's some other words we can use? And so we actually put that on the board, had a bit of a circle around it, and they came up with all these different words. And the amount of kids were sitting there going, oh, yeah, I should be using that one for this sentence.
Yeah,
and things like that was great. And instantly, their writing and their thinking changes. And you don't get that opportunity often enough, I feel.
No, and that's developing a love of writing. If we go back to our homework discussion, if kids aren't engaged, how are we going to get them to become good writers? Not all of them will become great writers.
No,
that's not what we want. But like you said, you want them to have the mechanics behind them. I think that goes with spelling. You're talking about what you just did then with the word said. We want them to get a love of words. That's so important, isn't it? I mean, it's not about just learning to rote spell. Investigating the stories behind words and their history and how far back they go in human civilization.
Fantastic.
It's all good fun.
Yeah, the last thing I wanted to mention to you as a grade 6 teacher this year, and you've probably been up that end, even in the grade 3s, more regularly and recently than I have, do you see the gaps? Do you get those kids at Ronnie where you see some of those gaps where you almost say to yourself inside, you go, that's a gap you shouldn't have in grade 6. Do you see that these days?
Yeah, you do. I mean, there's obviously some large gaps for students that may have some other learning issues, for want of a better term, but there are some of those. It's those simple mistakes that some good writers make. Where sometimes it is when they're rushing, but yeah, I definitely see them. Capital letters are full stops. But then sometimes we can focus too much on that, because you know, a student might give to you a fantastic and utterly enjoyable, engaging piece of writing. But if we're focusing on the punctuation they've left out, that can demoralise them. So it's a fine balance.
It is a fine balance. But I see that as an opportunity to go, given all that feedback on that story, it's wonderful and things. But then that's an opportunity to take away and go, look, if I had the opportunity, it'd be great to then sit down with that small group or have that mini lesson and do some of that on that punctuation where I don't have to get stuck into them there, but present it to the class or as part of that small group and go, this is something that I've, you know, analysed or seen and things, and talk about how to do it. And then the next time, you don't even have to mention it to them. You can see that improvement without, like I said, having to demoralise.
That's right. And that's what feedback and feed forward is too, isn't it? That's sort of like the good stuff, and then what can they work on next? So please, particularly our secondary teachers, what's happening in writing in your school?
G'day, Rick. How you going?
Good, Adam. How are you?
Yeah,
nice to be on a break.
Nice to be on a break, isn't it? Look, how did you have the staff meeting on PDP last night?
Big meeting. It was long. Okay.
Yeah, just okay, mate. Oh, mate, I had a concert to go to this weekend, but I'm actually cancelling so I can be at home to do my PDP. Things ever said in the
staff room. So the PDP, Adam, for our listeners outside Victoria, PDP is an acronym for the Performance and Development Plan. It's keeping teachers accountable, the evidence we have to provide to move up the pay scale, basically.
And it's always that thing that comes up. It's that time of the year for us, because it's got to be done by the end of term. And
would you take a concert off to stay home to just finish off your PDP for the meeting the next
day? Almost certainly not, unless my wife is trying to drag me to something like Justin Bieber. Then I would prefer to maybe do my PDP on that weekend if that were to occur. But it's kind
hello. Hello out there to all our Justin Bieber fans.
Yeah. You shouldn't be listening. Look, basically, it comes down to, it's just that time of the year, and PDP always gets that groan. Even when it's brought up, even when you're thinking, like I'm thinking about some of the things I want to do, and it's kind of like, oh, I'm feeling good about them, but you've still got to fill out so many boxes.
It's red tape.
Your goal. It is red tape. And the strategies and the evidence and then the AITSL standards and all that sort of stuff.
I think teachers have to be held accountable, and maybe there's so much we have to do for the PDP because there's been too many bad teachers out there. I don't know. But you're right. It's a lot of the red tape and the filling in. I mean, our leadership I've worked under before have said you shouldn't have to add so much to it. Bring what you do.
Yeah.
But I still think there is still a handful of, actually more than that, of just red tape tasks that we have to complete.
It is. And the evidence is always the one that gets me. I always feel like you've got to turn up with cases full of evidence when you kind of feel like the evidence is there. I mean, you come into my classroom enough, you'll see it. You'll see I'm doing all the right things. You'll see I'm doing this sort of stuff. And I know it's very data-based and data-driven and all that sort of stuff, which, you know, the word data just, you know, sets my mind, you know, aflutter.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's just, and, you know, yeah.
And to finish off, I think you hit the nail right on the head that many staff talk about the PDP, normally in hushed, stress tones in the staff room.
Yes, they do. Well, to our Rick and to our listeners, that brings an end to episode 74. And another enjoyable episode. I'm feeling like the fortnightly break, that sort of break in the middle, is actually doing us some good, mate. I feel refreshed every time I'm able to come down here. Because you and I spoke about at the beginning that, you know, trying to fit it in every week and do the things we were doing, kind of, it could really drag it down a little bit. It was that one extra thing, but I think it's working out quite well at the moment.
It is, and we aim to finish the term with a bit of a flurry, and we'll give more information about those episodes soon. Mm. I just wanted to give a shout out to, we've mentioned it a few times in this episode, haven't we, to secondary teachers who listen. There was a comment on the Facebook page about some of the discussion around homework being primary-centric. Now, you and I being primary teachers, certainly we don't take offence to that comment, but we do really encourage, we've had secondary teachers on before, Lee Burns and the like. Hello, Lee, if you're listening. But we would love to get more information from secondary teachers and try and help make that conduit between primary and secondary.
Because it's tough, because we can sort of comment on it, but because we're not in that system, it's hard to sort of really go into some depth, because the last thing we want to do is provide, you know, sort of false information or, you know, sort of miss the mark. We want to try and be as spot on as we can, and to sort of talk about some of those things can be quite difficult at times. And yeah, so to hear from our secondary listeners would be great.
It'd be great. But what I think it shows, and I think what the homework discussion on the Facebook page showed, though, is that we're talking about the bigger picture issues. It's not necessarily primary and secondary. We hope that a lot of the big education topics we talk about will apply to both.
That's right. Yeah, thanks for listening again this week, and we can't wait to be back in a fortnight's time. So from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and we've both been two regular teachers.